You want to know what I think of the place, mister? I get lumps in my throat, mister. I love little old New York.
Oh, visit there, sure. But live there? I wouldn't live there if you gave it to me on a platter garnished with $1,000. No, sorry.
The National Broadcasting Company presents The National Hour. This is a mirror of public opinion, reflecting what America and the world are thinking, planning, saying, doing. This is today's interpretation of the problems and the noteworthy milestones that we must reach and pass on the road to peace and reconstruction. Today, May 5th, 1946, we present the 25th in the distinguished NBC series, The National Hour. Our subject for today...
A report to the Algonquins.
Years ago yesterday, a real estate deal was transacted. A parcel of land, 14,211 acres, known as Manhattan Island, was sold by representatives of the Algonquin Indians to representatives of the Dutch West India Company for sundry goods and trinkets valued at $24.
This is an accounting on that piece of land. This is a memorandum to the sellers of that land. This is...
A report to the Algonquins.
From the island of Manhattan, this is Robert St. John. Within the next 40 seconds, we shall begin our report. In part historical, in part contemporary. In part noble, in part base. A report of places and things and people, but all a part of Manhattan Island, that small parcel of land sold by the Indians to the Dutch just 320 years ago yesterday.
And this is Robert McCormick, up here from Washington for just a day to visit the place I'd rather visit than live in. Since this is an average Sunday, I am one of perhaps 250,000, a quarter of a million other out-of-towners who have come to see the sights of Manhattan today. That's the usual quota of visitors each day, every day, descending upon this island in the center of our nation's largest city. A little later in the program, our NBC mobile unit and Bob Sherry will report in from a point on the island to prove or to disprove a theory about New York.
Well, I'm on my way home now. I got the papers in this brown envelope and the duck stitched on my blouse. On my way home from the war. And these are the places I'm going to remember. There was Corregidor, Luzon, Iwo Jima, and Okinawa. And the only place like it in the world, Manhattan, in the city of New York.
The years of the war just passed brought them all to Manhattan, brought them to Manhattan by the millions. They came in uniforms and they came in civilian clothes. They came alone. They came with their wives, their sweethearts, their families. They came from every state of the Union. They came from every country of the world. They came by the millions.
Every 20 seconds, 24 hours a day, a passenger train from somewhere discharges its cargo at the Pennsylvania Station or the Grand Central.
In numbers, daily, this is the entire population of Duluth, Minnesota, twice over, coming to visit our Manhattan Island.
Coming into the summer resort that does more tourist business than Atlantic City. Into the winter resort more flourishing than Miami.
Yes, they came by the millions during the years of the war, and each visitor carried away a tiny personal view of the island. They saw closely only a part of the city, a group of its citizens. But the true story of Manhattan is a combination of all those views. That is what we hope to develop today, a full picture of this city in which millions live and work, and to which millions come each year as visitors. But to keep this report to the Algonquins somewhat orderly, let's go back a bit in history by way of the youngsters in public school 207 somewhere.
Very good, Albert. And now, Doris, please read your theme about what happened after Peter Minuet came here from Holland.
Well, Mr. Peter Minuet.
Minuet, Doris?
P. Peter Minuet was the third Governor General. When he moved over to Manhattan from Governor's Island, he found the Indians living there. They were the Algonquins. That's what they called their tribe. They weren't very many because their enemies had killed a lot of them. And besides, they were very poor. So in 1626, Peter Minuet and...
Minuet, Doris?
Minuet and some of his men called some of the Indians together, and he said that he wanted to buy the island from them, and that he would pay 60 gilder for it because he was their friend. And the Indians said they would let him know tomorrow because first they had to have a meeting and decide about...
Well, Leaping Horse, what do you say? Shall we sell our land to the pale faces?
If we don't sell, they'll take it anyhow. I say sell.
But where will we go?
There is much land beyond the river, Broken Arrow, to the land called Hoboken.
Leaping Horse has spoken well. Let us take vote. All in favor of selling Manhattan Island, signify in the usual manner. We sell. Now, how about price?
Old man Minuet. Say 60 gilder. How much that in good American money?
About 24 bucks, but money just junk to worry pale faces. Let's take it in stuff we can use.
That is a good idea, Leaping Horse. Let us get some knives and beads, cloth and stuff like that. All in favor?
And so the next day, the Indians saw Manhattan Island. The end.
That's a very original way of presenting the story, Doris.
Thank you, Miss Clipper. I read it to my daddy. I don't know what he means, but he said I should call it Lo, the Poor Indian.
This is the National Hour calling Running Deer and Broken Bow and Leaping Horse and all the Algonquins on Manhattan Island in 1626. Here is a partial bill of particulars on what happened and what is happening on and to the island you sold for 24 bucks 320 years ago. In size, shape, and geographical location, the island is still the same. It's just that it's a bit tighter and it seems smaller.
The island is 12.5 miles long and 2.5 at its widest, and covers 14,211 acres. It lies at approximately latitude 40 degrees north and longitude 73 degrees west.
Its population of 200 in 1626 has grown steadily, so that now in 1946, its inhabitants number 1,860,000, which, considering its size, makes the island more densely populated than several neighboring territories called Brooklyn, Richmond, Bronx, and Queens.
Yes, the island is still the same. It's just that it has grown a bit tighter and therefore seems smaller. Politically, however, the island has seen changes, many of them.
It passed from the Dutch to the English, who named it New York. It went back to the Dutch, who renamed it New Amsterdam, and back once more to the English, who revived the name New York.
The island changed hands once more, and for the last time, when a tribe called Americans finally took it from the English in 1783 and established a city the following year.
In 1898, the city joined with four neighboring boroughs to form the city of Greater New York. And today, officially, the island of Manhattan is the borough of Manhattan, the county of New York.
But anywhere in the world, in Beirut or Reykjavik, in New South Wales or Tonopah, when they speak or dream of New York, it's always the island of Manhattan.
Yes, it's the same island of Manhattan on which the average mean temperature is about 50 degrees Fahrenheit, which is pretty much the same as that of London, Berlin, or Paris when no bombs are falling.
Here in the Weather Bureau, the lowest temperature we ever recorded was 14 degrees below zero on February 9, 1934. The highest was 102.3 degrees on July 9, 1936. I remember that day well because I was due at the office, and I was already more than an hour late. So I called the chief.
Hello.
Hello, chief. This is Frank. I'm up here in the Bronx.
Where did you say you are?
On the far side of the Harlem Bridge.
Well, what's holding you up? We're going crazy down here at the office. Every newspaper in town's bothering us for dope on this heat wave. What's holding you up?
Well,
believe it or not, Chief, the weather's holding me
up. Cut the comedy. It ain't funny.
No, no, I mean it. The heat expanded the drawbridge, and they can't get it closed.
No, Manhattan Island hasn't changed much geographically. It still lies between two rivers pointing out towards the Atlantic, away from the mainland. You get around now on 3,000 miles of streets laid out on a gridiron plan. North and south run the avenues, A and B, and 2nd Avenue, the Broadway of the east side, and 3rd Avenue, where the elevated trains still run, and Lexington Avenue and Park Avenue, with its slums at one end, and a little farther south, houses where you might find an apartment that rents as low as $100 a room.
Well, then we'll have to take it at $100 a room. We just can't go on like this. It means we'll have to sacrifice many necessities. We'll have to hold off taking the children to the dentist. But we've got to have a roof to put over our heads.
Oh, look, mister, if you know where there's a place, let me in on it, will you? We're sharing a place with two other couples and three kids. It's like living in the subway, except that sometimes in the subway I can get a seat.
Of the north and south running avenues, there's Lenox Avenue, which is the 52nd Street and the Broadway of that city within a city known as Harlem. And then there's 10th Avenue and the slaughterhouses and the railroad yards. And there's 5th Avenue, 5th Avenue of the lion-guarded library and churches and double-decker buses and shops. Well, shops where some of the loveliest ladies in all the world do their shopping and their window shopping. And then there's 7th Avenue and there's Broadway, of which more later. And there's 6th Avenue. Avenue of the Americas, where they tore down the L and planted trees in the sidewalks.
I was working for the landscaping company. Otherwise, I wouldn't hardly believe it myself. One of them trees, an oriental plane tree of all things, cost 800 fish. They had to dig a small subway to find a place to anchor it.
So the streets and avenues of Manhattan are all laid out with some system, but the building numbers are different on each avenue, and sometimes that causes trouble.
I beg your pardon, sir, but could you tell me where 961 Lexington Avenue would be? I'm a stranger
Why,
here.
Why, certainly. And what's more, I'll give you a sure, easy way how you can figure it out for yourself.
Oh, thank you, I'm sure.
To find the crosstown street nearest the given house number on a north-south avenue, all you have to do is cancel the last figure of a given number, divide the number by 2, and then add a key number. Kid in 3B can do it.
Well, I'm sure of it, but I really don't want to hold you up.
Think nothing of it. I'll give you a for instance. You're looking for 500 Fifth Avenue, so you drop the last figure, leaving 50, then divide by 2, and the 25, you add the key number, which is 17. Result, 42. 42nd Street. Simple, see?
That's most interesting. Now,
no, but of course, on Broadway, you subtract 31. And on Central Park West, you have to remember to divide the house by 10 and add 60.
But I'm looking for 691. Oh, I mean 961 Lexington.
Lexington? Mm. Let me see. Mister, you better ask the first cop you come to. I forget the code number for Lex.
In the documents at City Hall, appraisers looking over Manhattan real estate have marked down the figures. Estimated value of real estate and buildings, taxable and non-taxable, $9,929,802,000. But in the buildings and homes on the streets and avenues of Manhattan are people, a couple of million of them. Let's report on them for a moment. First, the inhabitants.
The people of Manhattan are Irish, Texans, Russians, Vermonters, Jewish, Nebraskans, German, Polish, Chinese, Greek, French, Swiss, Kansas, Oregonians, New Mexicans, Californians, Minnesotans, and New Yorkers.
In addition to which are the tens of thousands of men, women, and children born in Manhattan, included the estimated 54,000 born here last year.
These are the people that live in Manhattan and work here and do business and raise families, and send their children to school and pay taxes and vote. And a million of them never in a nightclub once in their lives. Though once, when they were young and full of vinegar, they went down to Times Square to howl and screech and shout the new year in.
thinking it over, there are two Manhattans. There's the actual Manhattan, and then there's the Manhattan of myth. But there is some myth in the actual Manhattan, and there's much truth in the mythical Manhattan.
You want to know what I think of the place, mister? I get lumps in my throat, mister. I love little old New York.
Visit there, sure. But live there? I wouldn't live there if they gave it to me on a platter garnished with $1 million. No, sorry.
A city? Oh, that's not a city. It's a crazy house. The way they carry on there. An hour there is only 40 minutes. And they try to squeeze 14 inches into a foot. But once before I die, I'd like to see it.
The Manhattan of Truth is an island to which each working day more than 2 million people come to carry on their business. They come to Manhattan from the boroughs of Brooklyn, Queens, the Bronx, and Richmond. They come from Westchester and from New Jersey and also from Connecticut. They come by way of the George Washington Bridge, the Harlem River Bridge, and the Brooklyn and Queensboro bridges, too.
I work in one of the skyscrapers downtown. I see them coming to work under the rivers by way of the Holland and Lincoln tunnels, in the subway swarm, on the IRT, BMT, and Independent, by bus and taxi and trolley. And a few of the lucky ones, they walk to work.
They call Wall Street the financial capital of the world. Thousands of us come to work in the banks and brokerage houses. We juggle around $1 billion or so, several hundred thousand shares of stocks and bonds, and then we call it a day.
Well, I'm a cutter of dresses. I come to work in an area in the 20s and 30s on the west side where three-fourths of the nation's clothing is made, where the bulk of ready-made women's clothing is designed and manufactured, where the dress industry is $1.25 billion business.
Me? I work at 35th Street in the East River in the biggest steam factory in the world. That's what we make and sell, steam, for steam heat and power. About 11 trillion pounds a year. We send it in pipes under the ground to provide heat in about 2,500 buildings from 92nd Street to the Battery. The steam's got to be hot, 365 degrees, and it travels 200 miles an hour. You know, though, I got to confess, sometimes it gets on my nerves, all that rush of steam, that heat. I got to have an outlet. You know what I mean. So in my spare time, I got a hobby. I raise canaries.
The Manhattan of Truth is the fabulous island of lush nightclubs, the theaters, but burlesque houses banned by law, the art galleries, sports stadiums, but the most fabulous thing to a visitor, it seems to me, is the congregation of piers, docks, and jetties known collectively as the Port of New York, the greatest in the world.
Yes, sir, and we who work the Port Authority are pretty proud of the job we did. During the years of war, the port handled as much as 24 million tons of military cargo every 6 months. You should have seen the port then. It included an airport, a hospital, an ammunition loading area, railroad yards, and the world's largest military warehouse.
In times of peace, the port handled passengers and cargo for 216 steamship lines. Through the port passed
Southern cotton for Liverpool,
Northwestern wheat for Bordeaux,
Kansas City hides for Brazil,
Virginia tobacco,
Massachusetts shoes,
Chicago canned meat,
Oregon lumber.
And now, once again, the furious commerce of peace has started its shuttle.
That's all very well and good. The big money, the restaurants, the stores. But to live there, how can people live there?
Lady, let me tell you. Manhattan has been called an anthology of small towns. The small town here is usually a neighborhood of a few blocks, or maybe just the block you live in.
Sure, it seems a little funny when you first come here. I'm with an insurance company. Been living in New York 10 years. But pretty soon you get to know the people who live in your house and the people on the street. And you get to know the delicatessen man and the candy store man and the tailor and the shoemaker. Maybe this will show you a little better what I mean. One day last year, I was on my way home from work. I stopped in the neighborhood store for cigarettes.
Change, Mr. Baker, $75. There's some excitement in the neighborhood today.
Yes, what happened?
Mrs. Lomanzo, you know the fruit store and where they sell flowers?
Sure, I know her.
Well, she got a letter today. Her son, the one they said was missing, he's coming home soon from a hospital in the Pacific.
Say, that's really good news, isn't it?
The whole neighborhood was in her store all day. free flowers to the customers. And when the boy gets here, they're going to make a party right here on the block. Everybody's invited.
Manhattan is steel and concrete and pavement. Manhattan is skyscrapers and noise. Manhattan is a place where very few people own their own homes, the price of Manhattan land being what it is. And yet, slap in the center of this island are 840 acres of Central Park, 50 blocks long, three avenues wide, with its lake and its zoo, its bridle paths and bicycle paths and walking paths, and its handsome
and
cabs.
And two bird sanctuaries. I'm on the police force, and part of my beat's in the park. Now, there's a spot near the lake at the foot of the stone steps that leads down from the 7th Avenue entrance at 59th Street, where gentle souls come with their bags of crusts and crumbs to feed the birds and the squirrels. Oh, dear, it's a sight to see.
The Manhattan of myth is the place where the people have gasoline in their veins and pavement in their souls, and where politeness and manners went out of date with Boss Tweed. But at a recent meeting of the Junk Men's Association, the chairman touched pointedly upon the etiquette of that profession.
Now, suppose if a housewife has got an item worth $3, and she wants maybe $6. Be always a gentleman, a credit to the profession. Don't say to this woman, nuts with it. Don't do this. No. Tip your hat. Be gentle. Be nice. Don't even slam the door. Lady, thank you just the same. This you gotta do if you don't want the public to look down on us as low class. Now, we gotta be gentlemen. Fellow junk dealer... Fellow gentlemen, the meeting's adjourned. Okay.
New York's good for only one thing. Visit there, get it out of your system, and go back home.
And when we speak of visiting New York, of course, we mean Manhattan.
It is a mean city. Too rich, noisy, dirty, lawless.
All this, too, is Manhattan, the Manhattan of myth with some truth in it.
Let me tell you something. Everywhere in the world, folks are thinking of this town, wishing they was here. Tell them they could have one wish, and that's what they'd ask for. And why not? There's nothing like it any place on a map. I know because I've seen it all.
The years of the war brought them all to Manhattan. In uniform and civilian clothes, they came by the millions. And money was as loose as, well, as loose as a jitterbug's socks. They came to New York, specifically to Manhattan, more specifically to the old wagon road that the early settlers used, the street that we now know as Broadway.
And now, after 5 years of this has passed, the main stem still has not returned to its old abnormal self.
It's still happy days for everybody. Broadway from 42nd to 52nd Street is still New Year's Eve, 7 nights a week.
I don't know where you can get a room, mister. We're filled solid. We got reservations booked as far ahead as November 9th for the Army-Notre Dame game. The way things are in this town, you can throw your hat on the floor this minute and rent the space that's under it.
It's the GI money that couldn't be spent overseas. It's the war industry money that there was no time to spend before. It's the millions in black market money that's flowing like water from a fire hose before the tea men catch up with it.
Perfume as high as $50 a bottle. And we no sooner put it in the window than it's all gone.
They walk in off the street, plunk down $1,500 for a ring like it's a newspaper they're buying.
We can sell more gowns from $35 to $50 than we can at $7.50. Black underwear is one thing we can't get enough of. Black underwear.
A movie house does $135,000 in business a week. And in the Times Square subway to take the nickel ride, passengers want change, yes, for $20, $50, and $100 bills. At the opening of this program, we spoke of a test we were going to make. We switch you now to Bob Sherry with the NBC Mobile Unit along Broadway at 45th Street.
This is Bob Sherry with the NBC Mobile Unit located at 45th and Broadway, the most popular meeting place on the island of Manhattan. We're here to engage in a minor sociological study. We're going to test a theory that you've undoubtedly heard. They say that New York is a melting pot, its residents assembled from other cities and towns all over the world. They say that if you stop 10 New Yorkers on the street, only one on the average will turn out to be a native New Yorker. So we shall question 10 people at random here on Broadway to test that theory. Let's get two ladies first. Here's the first lady. What is your name, please?
This is Ann Lampel.
And your address?
230 East 32nd Street, Manhattan.
That's Manhattan, New York. And where were you born?
Boston, Massachusetts.
Boston, Massachusetts. All right, our second interviewee, what is your name, please?
Miss Estelle Sugarman.
And Mrs. Sugarman, what is your address?
201 West 92nd Street.
That's here in New York on Manhattan. And where were you born?
Hartford, Connecticut.
Hartford, Connecticut. Now, our third, what is your name, sir?
DiCarlo.
Jack DiCarlo. Jack DiCarlo, what is your address, sir?
My address, 9926 42nd Avenue, Corona, Long Island.
Long Island, that's here in New York City, of course. And where were you born?
I was born in New York City, Manhattan.
Born in Manhattan, all right. And our fourth, what is your name, sir?
Leonard Abramson.
And where were you born, Mr.? What is your address, Mr. Abramson?
209 West 97th Street,
that's
New York City.
New York, Manhattan. And where were you born, sir?
Russia.
In Russia, all right. Our fourth, what is your name, sir?
Irwin Atkins.
Irwin Atkins, and what is your address?
105 West 75th.
That's here in New York on Manhattan. And where were you born?
Chicago, Illinois.
Chicago, Illinois. All right, sir, this gentleman right here, what is your name, sir?
R.G. Young.
R.G. Young. And Mr. Young, what is your address?
353 West 57th Street.
That's here in New York on Manhattan. And where were you born, sir?
Norfolk, Virginia.
Norfolk, Virginia. All right, and now this gentleman standing in back of you, what is your name, sir?
Thomason Guardian.
And all right, sir, what is your address?
229 First Avenue.
First Avenue, that's here on the island of Manhattan in good old New York. And where were you born, sir?
Brooklyn.
Brooklyn, New York. All right, and the gentleman standing behind you, what is your name?
Edward Ashton.
Mr. Ashton, what is your address?
219 West 20th Street.
That is here on the island of Manhattan. And where were you born?
Staten Island.
Staten Island, that's a portion of New York City, as you know. And this lady here?
This is Gertrude Carvedi.
And where? What is your address, Mrs. Carvedi?
222 Riverside Drive.
Riverside Drive on the island of Manhattan. And where were you born?
New York City.
New York City. And now I think we are at the end of our line. What is your name, sir?
Michael Hare.
And what is your address, sir?
148 East 32nd Street.
That's on the island of Manhattan. And where were you born?
New York City. And 148 4th Avenue and 33rd
Street. All right, in New York City. And we have... Five of these 10 New Yorkers were born in this city. Five were not. So our theory is neither upheld nor disproven.
The report to the Algonquins has been the subject of our documentary. And this is what we have learned.
That to millions of Americans, especially in time of war, New York, Manhattan in particular, became the place to go and the place to see. That millions of Americans wouldn't for all the world want to live here, but almost 2 million people actually do make their homes on this not large island. That in the center of this greatest city of our country, each block is a small town. Many of its residents springing from the small towns scattered all over the map of these United States.
On the subject of the island of Manhattan on its 320th anniversary of its purchase then, our documentary is closed.
But this is Robert St. John inviting you to listen to the National Hour again next Sunday when our subject will be the first milestone, 1 year along the road away from war.
This has been the National Hour. From our studio in New York and from a Broadway street corner, NBC has brought you the 25th in its series of broadcasts on current affairs and national problems. Robert St. John and Robert McCormick were your guides to Manhattan, and Bob Sherry conducted the sidewalk census. This is NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.